You know, Greg, sometimes there are teams every year in the offseason that give you a reason to kind of scratch your head and say, why do I want to be a fan of this team? The opposite of that is the Nashville Predators, who continue, it seems, every time we turn around, Nashville does something to make you, A, respect them, and B, love them even more. I know there's going to be a lot of gushing about Carolina and a lot of gushing about Bill Peters on today's podcast, but damn, is Nashville doing, and it's not just the Subban trade, Nashville doing some outstanding things, not just on the ice with the team. We'll get to the signings, have a look at the composition of the defense by way of salary cap commitments, but did you see what they put on their website?
No. What did they put on their website?
Okay. Our buddy, Paul Arno, at Paul Arno, tweeted us this yesterday. They put up a general, this is a tweet he sent, Preds put up a general fanager-esque contract tracker on their site.
Oh,
go really? To the Preds site, and it goes right down the team all the way through to 2021, how they were acquired, what the salary cap commitment is. Like, I'm just scrolling through this now, and I'm like, okay, attention 29 other teams, soon to be 30 other teams in the NHL. This is how you do it. This is how you tell your fans, this is how we're putting our team together. And it's not just the NHL, too. It's players that are in Milwaukee. It's, you know, it's like, this is outstanding. Like, this is, hey, guys, we're going to show you exactly what we're doing. Full transparency. Here's our team. Here's the numbers. Here's how we got them. Here's how we're putting our team together. I always say this. Make it easy for your fans to be fans. Nashville's doing it. Go have a look, Wish. It's great.
I kind of see it a little differently.
How do you see it?
I kind of see it as a team saying, you know, we've done really well managing our cap, and we would like everyone to know how well we've done.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, $6 million for Forsberg, that's a pretty good contract. $4 million for Roman Josi through 2021, through 2020, we could brag about that. $9 million for PK Subban, not our fault, that was someone else. I think this is also a chance for David Poile in the front and Paul Fenton in the front office to kind of put it out there that they're doing a pretty good job. Like, for example, you know, when you can put the Jarncroc contract $2 million per season through 2020 on there, that's as good as a press release.
If this were any other team other than Nashville or maybe Carolina, I would agree with you. But they've been doing this since the second lockout, the 205
right.
lockout started. They were, them and Carolina were the first two to publish salary. And now they've taken it to the next level. Here is our team. Here's the commitments. Here's how long we have Ribeiro signed. Here's how long we have Philip Forsberg signed. Here is their compensation. This is when it ends. This is when they're UFA. This is when they're RFA. And the interesting thing about this is, too, there's no guessing. Right? Like, these are the numbers. Now, they won't, you know, they don't have, they don't have a feature on their website where they break it down. And if they do, I'm missing it. They don't have a way to break down how much is salary, how much is bonus. You know, they don't have, you know,
it's just the cap hits.
Buyout software. You know, okay, yeah, right. If you want to buy out Mike Ribeiro, here's how you have to do it. Right. There's not that function on there. Like, so general managers still say, by the way, I'm having a lot of fun with the Las Vegas general manager expansion draft feature. It's my black hole this summer. But good for the Nashville Predators. Good on them for being, I got to go look at the other teams, but I'm pretty sure this is the first team to do this. Good on them for doing it. It's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. Until they sign Ryan Johansson for $8 million against the cap until 2024 next summer.
Yeah, they'll still.
And then it's like,
that.
Oh no, our site crashed. We lost all the information. We can't get it back. Oh no.
I get your point about, listen, when you have something to brag about, go ahead and brag about it. And
yeah.
The one thing that you keep coming back to with Nashville is, and I know that PK Subban makes $9 million, but if you look at defensemen 2, 3, 4, and 5, combined it's like $10 million bucks.
Yeah, all I'm saying is that I don't find it curious that the Detroit Red Wings don't have this feature on their website. That's all I'm saying.
Or the New York Rangers.
No,
although the Rangers have
myriad cap problems, but it's old contracts. I mean, like, the signings that they've made, decisions they've made this summer have been pretty good across the board. The Kreider contract was great. They've been doing pretty good. We'll get to that in a second, but let's pause on the Red Wings for a second, because this is news that has come down the pike since we last did a show. Danny DeKeyser, $5 million against the cap per season through 2022. What do you think about that?
I think it's a little bit rich.
A little bit long for it being that rich.
Yeah, it's long. He's through to 2022. It's a little bit long. It's a little bit rich. But I think they're in a situation where they're looking at their blue line and they're saying, he's kind of the best of our bunch. Like, what do we do? Like, you know, Nick Cronwall, the injuries have caught up. We can't pump him up anymore. The mask has kind of come off Jonathan Erickson a long time ago. We're trying to move Brendan Smith. What more do they have?
Yeah, I mean, like, I know it's out of necessity.
Like, he's okay.
He's a top four defenseman.
He's a top four defenseman. He's not a first pairing defenseman.
No,
but on the Detroit Red Wings,
he's a first pairing defenseman.
First pairing defenseman.
I think my issue with it was that in the NHL, it's a time honored tradition that if you're going to give term, then you get something back on the cap hit, and they didn't. Like, $5 million for DeKaiser is great if it's a 3-year deal. Yeah. But if it's going to 2022, it's a terrible contract. Like, they got no cap savings on this, despite giving this kid a long-term contract. It made no sense to me.
They're over a barrel. Right? They really are. Like, they're stuck. They're stuck. Yeah. What do you do?
They're $4.8 million over the cap right now, but that's without Franzen being on long-term.
Well, debt. They can throw Franzen on LTI. They can throw Joe Vitale on LTI as well. So that's how they do it that way.
That's your cap savings right there.
There's your cap savings. What do you make of the Mrazek signing? 2 years for a copy?
See, that's fine. That's actually a win for the Wings based on what he was asking for. And that contract would look absolutely fine, especially with him going RFA after 2 years, were it not for the fact that you're paying Jimmy Howard 5.3 against the cap for the next 3 years.
And there's no market to trade him.
Right. And you're hoping and praying Vegas bails you out.
And they might.
But there's going to be a lot of really good goaltenders available for Vegas. That's the problem.
We talked about it before. Vegas is going to get a decent team. The thing that Captain Obvious, but the thing that really saved the Detroit Red Wings last year was when Peter Mrazek went down. They had Jimmy Howard.
That's true.
Right? Because Mrazek all of a sudden, his glasses got foggy fast, and he was awful. And if they didn't have Jimmy Howard, would we be talking about the playoff streak at all? Probably not.
Now, going back to your Nashville thing for a second, by the way. So Allison chimes in and says that the Blue Jackets have one.
Oh, do they? Good for them.
And then also Frederick chimes in and says that the Hurricanes have one.
Not surprised about Carolina, and good. You know what? Good for Columbus, because that kind of blows up your idea.
Well, actually, but here's the thing. In fairness, the Columbus one is simply a contract tracker that tells you when they go UFA and RFA. And ditto Carolina. There's no money. It's just that they tell you when the contracts are up.
No. Not good enough. I can understand why Columbus may not want to.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Carolina, yeah, sure. Go for it.
Hell, if you're Columbus, why the hell don't even put the duration on there? That's the other issue.
Don't. Yeah, there's some interesting deals on that squad.
Right. So when do the Nashville Predators add Evander Kane's contract to their contract tracker? They are, of course, the island of misfit toys.
Not going to happen. I know. Not going to happen. I don't know. That's a real hot potato.
Extraordinarily hot potato. What do you do, though?
And what do you do
if you're Buffalo?
You try to move them. You got great things going on in Buffalo. Fantastic things going on in Buffalo. You don't need this.
Okay, you don't need it, but that's the question. It's going to be one of three things. It's going to be Evander is working on himself and he's going to make himself a better person, and this was a mistake that'll never happen again.
Heard it before.
And he will be on his contract as a member of the Buffalo Sabres. We tried to trade him, but we're unsuccessful, so we're going to make the best of it, or we're going to release him.
I don't think they'll release him. I think they're stuck with him right now. And play him.
Would anybody trade for him?
Maybe Vancouver.
You see, that's the thing that people keep saying. And Ben Kuzma, wrote a column this past week saying they should trade for him. as if it's ever the brightest decision
I wouldn't do that now.
Bring a wayward
not right now.
Allegedly woman done. Assaulting player back to where his boys are. That's always a smart decision.
Yes. A lot of times the player goes home story doesn't always work. As much as everyone talks about, oh, he's going to be so much more comfortable. Oh, look, the player's gone home. Oh, yes, it's going to be great. It's a fantastic situation. Ask any player. There are more headaches in a lot of ways than bonuses when you go to play at home. Because at least when you're playing away from your hometown, you can be anonymous and you cannot be a hockey player. You don't have to be 24/7. But when you go home, specifically in Canada, you're a hockey player 24/7. And there's expectations, and we have phone calls from all your guys all day long. Even if it's something as simple as just looking for tickets.
They have to get him off the roster, though. I mean, he'll probably plea it down. He's got that wet sack of ferret droppings lawyer that Patrick Kane had to get him out of this situation.
Complete with Hustler mug.
This is the greatest. Again, nice touch. It's just like
classy
he's,
touch.
He's sitting there talking to the media about an alleged sexual assault, and he's got a Hustler magazine mug.
Having said that, full disclosure, the woman that does pretty much all of my ink is the cousin of Larry Flint.
Really?
Yeah, Pauline Zahalan. She did my half sleeve. She did my forearm. She did my back. Yeah.
You see, but an association with Hustler magazine, I think, is apropos in the tattoo community.
Fair enough.
Maybe not so much in the legal community.
Fair enough. Okay.
So he'll plea it down, and then you're stuck in the situation where the fans clearly don't want him there. Who knows with the teammates? I mean, based on previous history, I'm going to guess that something will get thrown in a shower at some point. Wow. So you got to do something with him. But the argument that the column from Vancouver made, and it makes you fear. It goes back to what I said about the Predators and Ribeiro and all that stuff. Yeah. The thing that makes you furious is that there will be somebody who will take the talent despite the baggage. There will be somebody out there.
What did Don King always say? Where there's money, there's understanding. Or is it where there's money, there's forgiveness? One of the two. And if you can show that you can help a team in a position get closer to the Stanley Cup, they will look the other way.
And let me say this about the Vander Kane thing. I've had a lot of really charming people from Winnipeg coming at me in the last couple of weeks about, you see, wasn't racism, was it? He's just a bad guy. Why can't it be both? Because, he's a bad guy, and I don't think anybody who looked at the coverage and the reactions that he got in Winnipeg was trying to portray Evander Kane as a saint. The thing that you always heard about him was he was kind of a bad guy. But when it's like racial coded coverage of his behavior at restaurants and the amount of money he leaves, and it's criticism of the money phone photo and the money push-up photo and of his hair.
The criticism of the money photo, I will agree with you 100%, was racist in tone. Because we all laughed at Mike Commodore doing the same thing.
Yeah. The thing is that I understand that you have this desire to use the alleged assault of three women as a chance for you to clear your city's name, which is just real classy. But I'm going to stand right here and tell you that, the coverage that Evander Kane received in Winnipeg and the reactions he received from fans, there was some racial undertones to it. It was kind of disgusting. And what's happening in Buffalo does not exonerate that. It could be both. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. It's a... in a situation like this, I always look at the temperament of the general manager. Like when you raise the question, what are they going to do with him? Okay? You think to yourself, we just talked about Nashville. You know, what would David Poile do? You know, we're going to have Bill Peters coming on here top of the hour. What would Ron Francis do? And I can't help but thinking, you know, always, what goes through the GM's head? Like, what goes through Tim Murray's head right now?
Well, unfortunately,
when he sees this, like,
what,
honestly,
went through
like,
his, but Merrick, what went through his head at the draft, because I was standing right next to him, was almost this kind of flippant reaction to it, saying, well, we'll see where the investigation goes, and then, you know, if it's proven that these people are lying, because he's thinking about the last thing that happened to him, then he literally said that we'll have to figure out how to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
With all due respect, though, do you think what he says and how he reacts publicly is the same as how he reacts privately?
I hope not.
I will almost guarantee you 100% that the way he reacted publicly is not the same way he reacted privately. I can't see Tim Murray. And again, I don't know Tim Murray. I know him a little bit. But the thing that I do know about Tim Murray is there's just no way.
Yeah.
There's just no way. Because listen, he stuck his neck out for this guy.
He stuck his neck out for this guy, and he made a pretty significant transfer of talent to Winnipeg to get him.
Now, if you'll recall why, you know, one of the motivating reasons was he was trading for an injured player and was going to harm his team in order to help their chances of winning the Connor McDavid.
That's right. Stakes. That's correct.
Well, so let's not lose sight of that.
All right. So it did work out. So Evander Kane for Jack Eichel, basically, is what you're saying.
Evander Kane and Jack Eichel.
Right.
In the deal.
Yeah, but they're going to have to get rid of him. This is a huge embarrassment. It is like you said. It's literally a team that gave a guy a chance to clear his name, to not put himself in situations, and he's put himself in situations twice. And now he's been arrested. I mean, we haven't said that yet. He's been arrested. Like, an NHL player has been arrested for criminal trespass and various other misdemeanors. Which, reading the police report,
yeah.
Oof, man, you hear all the time about, you know, if he wasn't a famous athlete, what'd he be charged with? This is one of those situations. You're reading the police report. You're like, my God, if this was my boy from like high school, I'd be reading a whole different story in the Mattawan, New Jersey police blotter.
Hey, how close was that club to the place that we had our draft party? Because I talked to, I can't remember who it was. Ugh, this is so sloppy of me. I talked to someone who was convinced that they didn't see the altercation, but they saw aftermath in the parking lot. Yeah.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. I can't remember who it was.
I'm still trying to figure out how the hell we didn't have our meetup at a place called Bottoms Up. How we missed that?
Come on, Kevin Kennedy. Kevin Kennedy booked it. He's usually spot on. Man, Bottoms Up. I like the place we had our meetup.
Oh, the place we had. We talked about it on the show. The place we had our meetup in Buffalo was a giant drinking hall that also had professional wrestling practice going
so
on.
So good. So good.
Best. We have Bill Peters coming up in about 10 minutes. It gives us time to talk about Jimmy Vesey for a second.
Okay.
I don't know how many more of these shows we're going to do as I fly off to Rio on Sunday. We should touch on Vesey. So,
sure.
The Chicago Blackhawks have entered the fray, mm-hmm. which, as I said on Puck Daddy yesterday, is like when you're chatting up a girl at a bar and all of a sudden Leonardo DiCaprio and his posse show up next to you. And all of a sudden he's talking about private planes, beaches in Spain. Oh, by the way, have you met Spider-Man, my friend?
I was glad you threw that line in there because that's always been one of my go-tos. When you're shocked at something, I always say, yeah, it's like waking up and finding out that your neighbor is Spider-Man. I laughed to myself inside when I saw you use that line on PD yesterday. That was a great
but
wish.
As I said in the piece, despite Leo DiCaprio sidling up next to Jimmy Vesey, I think he's going to Boston.
Yeah.
It there's been rumblings for months that it's going to be Boston. When he talks about Boston, he talks about Boston like a kid who wants to live the dream. He doesn't want to defer the dream and maybe sign there when he's 28. He wants to live the dream now. I think it could be Boston.
It wouldn't surprise me. Toronto wouldn't surprise me. I really don't have a read on this one at all.
Would Buffalo surprise you?
Oh, considering it hasn't happened yet, and they have his rights.
And no one's going to sweeten the pot because he's got a rookie contract.
Like, you know what the deal is? Like, the deal's going to be the same everywhere. Right? It's just going to be, okay.
Well, That really depends.
Here's the
when
math.
He has his meeting. When he has his meeting with Toronto, will the CEO of Canadian Tire be there?
Jimmy Vesey has the same cachet here in Canada sure? as Steven Stamkos does. With all due respect, you know, Hobie Baker, notwithstanding.
Yeah, it'll be the president of Canadian Hubcaps, just a little bit lower down the down the ladder.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'll be the exact same as that, but. Yeah, Boston wouldn't surprise me. Buffalo probably would a little bit. Seeing that Chicago's in that mix doesn't surprise me. Seeing that the Rangers are in the mix doesn't surprise me.
Doesn't surprise me either. And Custance wrote that up the other day on ESPN, the fact that Gorton has a relationship with VC's agent. They like each other a lot. And that's a place where, I mean, you talk about the lore of a venue, the lore of geography. I mean, the Rangers are going to be right there too.
Rangers will be there as well. God, I really don't know.
All we know is it won't be Nashville.
I would love him to swerve everyone and sign with Nashville. Like, you look at what David Poyle's done, and you go like, you know what, upon further consideration, Nashville.
I told you, David, I don't want to sign with you. I'm so sorry that I said I would.
Did we mention we traded for P.K. Subban?
P.K. Subban? Why did you say so?
Kelly Yarncroak in at two a copy times 6 years. We got a little bit of room here for you as well. Have you seen our defense? Pekka Rinne, by the way, still our netminder.
All right, so you say anybody, and I say Boston. Gun
yeah,
to your head.
I don't know. I don't have a
gun to your head. What do you say?
Boston.
All right, there you go. Congratulations, Boston Bruins.
You just got Jimmy Vesey.
To completely 100% lead pop lock accurate predictors of things have said Boston.
Gold. Yeah.
All right. Before Bill Peters joins us, one more thing I wanted to talk about. Bettman and his letter to Blumenthal, the senator, about concussions and CTE.
Do we have enough time for this one? Because this might take a while.
We can pick it up after Bill joins us. Okay. But I'm just going to say this again. I find it extraordinarily insulting as a human with a functioning cerebral cortex to hear the commissioner of my favorite sport say there's absolutely no correlation between concussion sustained in contact sports and brain disease. That's a problem for me. That's a head in the sand, legal challenge. I know why he's saying it. He's a lawyer. Problem for me. Because it's just nonsense. That said, Bettman's continuing stand against the idea that there is a correlation between concussions and CTE and that the science is there and that we know everything. We know everything to the point where we should be telling players about it and warning them and all this other stuff. I kind of agree with him still. And the way he explains it, I know, comes off as phony. And the fact that the NFL has now come out and said it, now that their lawsuit's been settled, is a thing that's a problem for the NHL. But again, like we've talked about before, what he's essentially saying is that how do I go into a room of 300 NHL players and say, if you continue to play this sport, there's a chance that you're going to develop this dementia, this ongoing depression, all of this degenerative stuff that goes along with CTE. How is he going to tell that to a room of 300 NHL players if there's a chance that some guys are just genetically predisposed to get it and some guys aren't? Because that's where the science is right now.
No.
There's no direct linkage.
There's no A to B.
There's no A to B.
There's no direct
and he's,
line.
And he's,
now,
right on, he's right on that.
Again, though, I have – and again, I'm not a doctor. I mean, I base a lot of what I think about this in my conversations with Dr. Rendley, who you've met a couple of different times at our podcast parties, at our Puck Talks. And actually, she just worked with Dr. Charles Tater about a month ago in Toronto for a week and a half. And she continues to tell me that, yes, it is technically true. There is still no straight line you can draw between concussions and CTE. We strongly believe there is one, but it's not there yet because they just don't have the evidence. And I think that, you know, there's a Globe and Mail piece by James Myrtle where he points out that, you know, where Dr. Charles Tater points out that one of the best things the NHL can do right now, and maybe this is more incumbent on the PA to do that, is to encourage players to donate their brains when they pass away.
Hmm.
So that, you know, it's awful for this generation of hockey player, but for subsequent generations of hockey players, we will be able to draw a causality. Like, I'm not a doctor, but this is what I believe. I believe that multiple shots in the head, A, don't tickle, and B, are bad for you long term, mm-hmm. and can probably lead to CTE. But I don't know. All I can do is defer to the experts, defer to the doctors. So I'll listen to Dr. Charles Tater. I won't listen to senators. I won't listen to lawyers, okay? I won't listen to lawyers in lawsuits, but I will listen to the people, you know, the brain surgeons that do this, people that are involved in neuroscience. And they all keep coming back to the same thing. We believe this is true, but we don't have that straight line yet.
And the bottom line is this, like the two takeaways that I had from Bettman's letter were in kind of juxtaposition. The first is that the NHLPA is educating players, or at least mentioning to players about CTE in their preseason presentations about concussions. At least they're saying, hey, there's this thing called CTE, may want to look into it. That's great. That's a good thing. A bad thing is when Gary Bettman accuses the media and lawyers and doctors of fear-mongering the CTE thing, mm-hmm. and then uses the example of Todd Ewan, who, you know, tragically took his own life because he thought he had CTE, or at least that was a factor in it. And now Bettman's using this as the Roswell crash. Now Bettman's saying, okay, here's an example of a guy who was so afraid of the fear that you guys are selling with the CTE thing that he took his own life. And he's saying, we can't afford to let that happen again. Like, the media is being irresponsible with it. And I'm thinking to myself, no, dude, the media is filling in the blanks that you guys refuse to fill in for these players. Like, they're getting the education from the doctors through the media. It's not fear-mongering at all. If they've got fear, it's the fear that they have playing an inherently violent sport. But the idea that, like, the media or the medical community should have blood on their hands because a guy may have freaked out about it is just so disgustingly irresponsible. Just infuriated me when I read that.
The thing that I don't disagree, the thing that I don't appreciate is when people in our position assume the roles of doctors and start saying definitely that there is this association. Because right now we're still in the ask questions phase in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
About this situation. Like, when someone comes down too hard and says, there is a correlation between concussions and CTE and the NHL needs to do something about it right now. Is that pouring gasoline on it? Yes. Because you're not an authority. It's
sure.
like when the it's like when the lockout happens and I've got to go on the radio every day and pretend that I'm an actuary and I know things, sophisticated things about NHL pensions and can explain it. Right? It's fraudulent. Anyway, we'll pick up the conversation in a sec because the man who was the best guest we had all last season, Wish, is standing by.
Joining us now on the line, a man with a spiffy new contract.
Hey, hey.
He's Carolina Hurricanes coach Bill Peters, and he joins us now on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. Bill, it's me, Greg. Jeff's over there. Congratulations on the new deal.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate that.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and I'm curious what someone in your situation, because we talked about this, you know, ad infinitum last year, the work you did specifically with the blue line, the improvement in the neutral zone play with the Carolina Hurricanes. What do you do for a follow up act, Bill? Like, what are you working on with this summer for the team?
Well, you know what? We're going to make a small change in the neutral zone, try and get a little more aggressive in certain situations. We got some ideas on how we can score more. And really, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to let our young guys evolve. Our young D, I think, are going to take a step. I don't expect them to take a huge step. I want to be realistic with that. But now things are going to slow down for them a little bit. So plays that they might not have seen last year, they're going to be able to see. And plays that they were just short of making, I think they're going to make. And our forwards are going to continue to get better. The Victor Rask, the Elias Lindholms of the world. I thought Jeff Skinner had a good year. If he stays mm-hmm. healthy again, he'll have another good season. And I'm excited about Tara Vinen coming into our lineup. And also, I think Aho's going to make our team. I've been on the ice with him at a development camp 2 years ago. I coached against him in the World Championships. I have a pretty good idea what he's all about. So I think he's a guy who's going to help us. And then obviously we got better with Stempniak and Bickel and Stahlberg also.
How do you, go ahead.
I was going to say, can I pause on one thing you said there I'm curious about, Bill, and that's, you know, we're working on ways to improve scoring. There used to be, and it seems as if this is changing, Bill, there used to be a vibe, there used to be a feeling that you can't teach touch, that scoring is something you either had or you didn't have as a player. Are you in the camp that says that's not true, and yes, you can teach scoring?
Well, you've got to work on it. I think you can teach it to a certain degree. I don't think you can just say, you know, you are what you are when you arrive at the rank. Either you're a 10-goal scorer or 15-goal scorer. You got to continue to work on it. You look at every other sport, and it's guys are up and down a little bit in certain skill sets. You know, guys driving a golf ball all of a sudden struggle with the putter, then they get the putter straightened out, and then away they go. And, you know, baseball players are no different. All of a sudden they're hitting for average, and then power comes, and you know, the next year maybe the power numbers are down, but the average stays up. I think you have to work on it. You can't just stick your head in the sand and say, you know, this is what we are. We're only going to generate 215 goals or whatever the number is. We've got to find ways to generate. We know what they are. The two biggest things that we're talking about as a staff is the power play, number one, and that front presence on all four lines on a consistent basis. And for me, as a player, when it's your turn to be at the front of the net, you got to take your turn. Doesn't matter who you are.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, but when it comes to goal scoring, like, is part of that maturation as a goal scorer, you know, if you know, you're not just a 10 goal guy, you could be a 20 goal guy. Is it approaching how you score goals differently? Is it going to places on the ice where you're not necessarily going, and then trying to see if you could be that player, be that net front guy?
Well, you know what, and when I say net front guy, I'm not talking about a guy who just gets there and plants, you know, like in yesteryear. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when it's your turn to be the middle driver and go to the net, stop net front, make sure you're doing that, make sure you're opening up ice for others. The biggest thing that you can work on your skill set, too, is your release. It's got to get on and off the stick quicker on most situations. The times that you spend stick handling the puck, you're basically dead-ending the play, so you got to receive it, you got to shoot it, and you got to also have the maturity and the hockey sense to shoot to create rebounds. People hate hearing it, but there's certain times and locations on the ice when you're shooting, you're scoring. So you better generate a rebound for the guys going to the net and for a second and third opportunity. It's the ones when you're on a sharp angle, low, wide, outside the dots, and you're trying to score a short side shelf, and you miss the net and you rim it out, and then you're back checking. Those are the ones that drive the coach crazy and the line mates.
Can I ask you about sticks, Bill? You said something interesting again, no surprise. One thing that we've noticed about sticks, you know, all over hockey now, maybe just because of factory manufacturing, is that everybody uses a high lie. Like, the art of the lie seems to be gone. But are you a coach that's, and some coaches have been, some aren't, are you a coach that's sensitive to the type of stick that a certain player is using? Like, if you're a goal scorer, you should be using this type of stick, this type of blade, this type of curve, this type of lie. Are you a coach that takes an active interest in the actual sticks that players are using?
No, just because I wouldn't have any credibility in that regard, but I do believe in the technology that exists in the sticks. It's unbelievable. When you get a stick, you know, that works for you and fitted for you, you're well on your way. So I'll look at patterns. I'll look at some things. I'll talk to guys quickly, very quickly, briefly about sticks, but I'm not going to get involved with that. But I just know with kick points and everything else and flex, yeah, that you can let the stick do the work. And I do believe most guys have a stick that's too stiff, no question. And I think what's happening now is you got to get your shot away so quick that you got to use the stick that you can load up naturally just by letting the natural whip of the shaft do the work instead of the big long wind up on the wrist shot.
So in your summertime, you know, at a barbecue, maybe you're jotting some things down on a napkin, where do you see Teravainen slotting in?
Well, I know exactly where I see Teravainen slotting in. I've got Aho, Teravainen, and Lindholm on a line. Now, where they go, I don't know. Lindy played a little bit of center for us last year at the end of the year and was very good and got better as he went. Teravainen was very successful playing the off wing in Chicago as a right winger, has some ability to play center. I think that's going to be a line, and what happens then if Teravainen and Lindy are together, one guy can take faceoffs on the right side in the D-zone and the other guy the left side in the D-zone, and all three are responsible defensively. Not that I've given that line any thought, but I think it's going to be a real good line for us.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Aho play center at the World Juniors as well? Isn't he, like, isn't that a three centerman line?
You're 100% bang on, and then if they're really into it, and then whoever gets back first, just play down low and let that guy play down low and fill slots. If we can get to that point, and then all four lines can play hockey that way, we'll have some.
Here's why I find that really interesting. Are you seeing this as more of a thing in pro hockey right now? Once upon a time, it was, you know, the centerman's responsibility to carry the puck over the blue line. The centerman was the most creative. But now, more so than ever, maybe it's a function of centerman being moved over to the wall, we're seeing more wingers as the creative element on a line. You know, it's the winger that does the zone entry. It's the winger that sets up. You know, that playmaking winger seems to be more of a thing. Pat Kane is obviously the touch point for all of it. The playmaking winger seems to be more of a thing in the NHL, Bill, than ever before.
For sure it is. And two guys that jump out, and you mentioned one in Kane, and the other one, Jonathan Drouin. Jonathan Drouin, to me, makes tons of plays, and he's more of a playmaker than he is a finisher as a winger. The game just continues to evolve. Like, everything, it's so hard to score. So, you know, it used to be a center's job to get the puck to the wingers. But the game's so fast now that I think once you line up, you're standing in a position. But once the game starts, you just play. Like, if you're the center, and everyone says the center's got to play down low, 3-on-3. But if he's the last guy back in the zone, obviously a winger's got to fill in for him. So in my books, you're looking for smart guys who can just read and react off each other and fill holes and have versatility. But you definitely see more playmaking coming off the walls and the wings than you ever have.
So your goaltending didn't set the world on fire last year, and it's Cam Ward and Eddie Lack back again this year, with Cam Ward getting a new contract. Where are you on that? What was your thought in not trying to make a change there and going with the same duo that we had previously?
Well, you know what? I like the two goaltenders we have. We got to play better in front of them. Numbers aren't perfect, but some of the breakdowns we had weren't perfect either. So even in the games when we're, you know, out shooting a team 40-20, all of a sudden the breakdown that we do make or the decision we make in the neutral zone is just huge. And that's part of being young. So, you know what I mean? Like, the quantity of the shot was good. The quality of the shot, in my opinion, a little bit too high. We can tighten up our D-zone play, be a little more efficient there so we don't spend as much time there. And at the end of the day, they're going to be better just because we're going to be better. Eddie's going to be more comfortable being in year two of our organization. I know he got engaged this off season, so he's, you know, taking steps away from the rink, and he's going to be dialed in, so I'm not worried about that one bit. And then what I want to make sure we do is get some for our goaltenders.
Oh,
now we better call him back. He was doing he's outstanding. Sam, let's get let's just grab him.
Sam, let's call him back.
Call him back.
We're almost there.
So close. So close.
He's so
one thing
smart.
We do have to. He's an intelligent guy.
He's clearly also one of these coaches, and I think every coach in the league is like this now. He's a duos guy. Hey, Bill,
do we have you back?
Yeah, you do. Sorry about that, guys.
Hey, no worries, man. Sunspots and all that. All right, goalies, whatever. I want to ask you about Worlds. What was your experience like coaching a Canadian All-Star team at Worlds?
Oh, it was fantastic. Anytime you can represent your country, you got to do it. You know, I was talking about the other day, 2 years ago, we had Sidney Crosby and everybody else on that team, and this year it's Connor McDavid and the gang. So, unbelievable group of young guys. I give Duchesne, Hall, and O'Reilly a ton of credit for bringing that team together right away. It was a very tight-knit group, a young group, and a group that got better as we went along in the tournament. A lot of fun.
Is there ever a moment with that team? Like, is there a few days of really trying to have to work hard to figure out where the pieces fit and where the guys feel comfortable, or is it just sort of a thing where all these guys have been on these all-star type teams before and kind of know their roles? Or do you have to ever do any heavy lifting and say, okay, I know you're a top line 22 minute a night guy in the NHL, but here you're not going to be that?
Well, I think everyone goes into that well aware that their minutes aren't going to be the same they are in the NHL. Like, you look at a guy like O'Reilly, led the NHL in forwards, I believe, close to 20 minutes a night, and they're all used to being in that 18, 19 minute a night range, and that's just not possible with the amount of talent we have in our country. And especially in international hockey, you dress 13-7, so all of a sudden now you've got your 7th D-man, you're trying to get him ice time, and your 13th forward, and it's tough. It's tough for the players, and it's not easy for the coach. But we were so fortunate here, my 2 years involved, that we've got just unbelievably mature team-first type guys, and that's a credit to the general managers who put those teams together. So it's different. It poses some different challenges, but if you communicate with them and you're honest with them, they understand and they know exactly where you're coming from. They might not love it, but they at least know. You got to communicate with your players for sure.
It's always tough not to watch Connor McDavid out there, but the one player that I kept coming back to when I watched the World Championship team, Bill, and I've been banging his drum for a long time, and I think people are really starting to warm up to how really solid a defenseman this guy is. My eyes kept going back to Ryan Ellis, Nashville Predators defenseman, one of the more underrated guys in the NHL. What was the coach's thoughts on Ryan Ellis, the Worlds?
Well, outstanding, outstanding. And what a commitment he made to come over. You know what? He was great for us. I've had Ellie twice, had him on the under 18 team. He was fantastic there. Unbelievable on the power play. I had him again in this tournament. And just to tell you how good a guy he is too, I don't remember who we were playing, but it's game day. He flies over, gets there. We stick him in the lineup. And you could only imagine how you feel after that flight and everything else that's been going on in his life. He just goes right in the lineup and plays. And then probably the biggest goal, one of the biggest goals of our tournament was the game winner against the U.S. in the semifinal, the 4-3, and it was a Ryan Ellis bomb coming down the right side, caught them on a bad change. So he was huge for us.
That's awesome. All right, last one from me, Bill. What do you have to see from this Carolina team, outside of other teams obviously ahead of you dropping down the standings a bit? What do you need to see from this team in order for it to be a playoff team this year?
You know what? We got to get off to a good start. We haven't done that in my 2 years, so I got to find a way to make sure we get off to a good start. And our specialty teams have to be dialed in right off the hop, coming out of training camp. Those are two things that, you know, we know that has to happen. And we can't go on extended negative losing streaks. We've got to find ways to get points. So those games when you're trailing with 10 minutes to go and you get a power play, you got to find a way to get it tied. Then you got a point, and if you get a point, the extra point, in overtime or shootout, there you go. So, you know, when you go from getting – looks like you're not going to get a point to getting two. That's the big difference. And then the head-to-head matchups with our, you know, the teams that we're going to be competing with. I think it's probably four teams in the East that you can kind of pencil in the playoffs. And after that, I believe it's wide open. So we've got to make sure we do a good job against those other teams and make sure we don't have extended losing streaks.
Bill, last one here, and we thank you for your time today, and congratulations on the contract extension. Eric Tulsky is someone I have a lot of time for, head of your analytics department as well. I know for some teams there are a lot of barriers between the analytics department and the coach. Like the information, it takes a while to get there. You got to go to the AGM, the AGM goes to the assistant coaches, then the assistant coach presents it to the coach. How does the dynamic between the analytics department and the head coach work in Carolina?
No, it's real easy. I think his extension is 3614. I call him and ask him to come down into the war room. And then when it's time to get back to work and we're done with him, I kick him out because he'll stay down there all day. So I kick him out and I say, hey, we got to go to work. We practice here at 11, so you got to leave. But when we get off the ice, I like this project. And then I give him projects, but he kind of scoffs at them because they're so simple-minded. He likes the big, long, elaborate ones. But I like the information, and he gives us real good information.
There you go.
That's great stuff. Bill, thanks as always for stopping by, and we mean sincerely. Congratulations on the contract. One of our favorite teams is always to watch, and you're a big part of it, Carolina Hurricanes. Thanks, Bill.
Okay, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Bill Peters, head coach, Carolina Hurricanes. That is interesting about the Tulsky relationship, too, because I know one team specifically in the NHL where, God, the layers you have to go through to get to the coach when you work in the analytics department. It's insane who you have to present information to. And then you're always sensitive about that information getting massaged, let's just say, before it arrives at the head coach. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, hi, Deke.
Hey,
Deke. Yeah. But I guess not so much in Carolina.
Interesting. He's a smart dude.
He's a smart dude. He's engaging. Here's what I like about Bill Peters is a lot of coaches, and for good reasons, I understand it, very, very guarded. But really when it comes down to it, I mean, he's selling a program, he's selling his team, and he's trying to, you know, explain to hockey fans what he is doing with this mm-hmm. squad and trying to be as honest as you possibly can. Can you be 100% honest if you're a coach or a general manager? Well, no. You know, one of the questions I've always wanted to ask a GM is, would you lie publicly to protect your team, or would you lie publicly to help your team? And of course the answer is yes.
Do you think that the goaltending situation is as it is because they're not quite there yet as a contender?
Oh, like they're not at the high point of their win cycle yet?
Like we don't need to go in and get Ben Bishop or something, because we're not quite there yet as a contender?
They're not quite there yet. I mean, I think they're a contender to make the playoffs. they're not a contender to win a Stanley Cup. But who was out? Okay, who was out there for them to get?
No, I don't know. I was just saying. I was just asking because Cam Ward. I'm not really a Cam Ward guy.
No, I know, and for good reason. I get that. How much of that is expansion draft? Like, there's going to be a lot of there'd be a lot of boo-boo faces of players that get left exposed. And I don't think it would surprise anybody to see the Carolina Hurricanes expose Cam Ward.
And you have to expose a goalie. That's the other thing.
Got to expose
too.
A goalie.
Yeah. The other problem for Carolina is Washington, Pittsburgh, the Rangers, Florida, Tampa Bay, Detroit, New York, and the Islanders and the Flyers. And
Metro.
Boston.
Just the...
And maybe the Devils.
Okay. Hold on.
Hey,
on a second.
The great Dan Rosen of NHL.com said he saw the Devils as a wild card team.
Slow the flow there on the New Jersey Devils. I know you're really excited about Taylor Hall. I know you have one of the best goaltenders in the world in Corey Schneider. I get all that. Let's just...
I mean, yeah, but...
Pump the brakes a little bit.
Pump the brakes, right. 50 goals out of Hall. About a 125 goals against for Schneider. I mean, fill in the blanks around that. That's a good starting point.
All right, okay.
All right, let's leave the Devils out of it. Islanders, Flyers, Detroit.
I know.
Lightning, Panthers, Rangers, Pittsburgh, Washington. Maybe Detroit takes a little tumble. They barely got it.
Oh, yeah, I can see them taking a tumble.
But even still, that's still a problem if you're Carolina.
Because
Carolina ain't in that division. Carolina's got the Capitals, Penguins, Rangers, Islanders, and Flyers ahead of them in the queue right now.
It's death, right? That's why if you're a team in the Atlantic, you load up because outside of Tampa, it's kind of wide. With all due respect, Florida.
Do you think either Buffalo or Toronto will make the playoffs this year?
Nope. Buffalo's a better shot. I know everyone in Toronto's talking like, oh, yeah, Austin Matthews is off to the races. There's still more pain.
Oh, we didn't even mention Montreal, which is only going to get, the best goalie in the world back this year.
Yeah, and they've lost one of the best defensemen in the world in PK Subban.
Ah, but they've gained one of the best defensemen in Nashville named Shea Weber.
We did the Weber-Subban thing already. Well, don't need to get any more. Don't need more hate. It seems like the thing is, I don't hate Shea Weber, but everyone you talk about him in association with PK Subban, it comes off as if you do.
It's that other thing. It's that other thing about like how to justify a trade or justify your team's move or even justify your own opinion. You have to like you have to lift up one guy and knock the other guy down like several pegs. Yeah. It's silly.
It's yes, they get the best goaltender back in the world, but now here's the thing: all the pressure's on all those guys that wanted PK Subban out. No more excuses.
Phil Bowen wants to know, do we have any thoughts on how the Tyson Barrie contract situation will play out? Well, I think they get a deal done before arbitration.
$5 million? What does he want, six? And they're offering four?
Yeah, $5 million, 2 years.
I just don't know why you go to war, although they did it with Ryan O'Reilly. I understand PO'd about the offer sheet. I just don't know why you go to war with someone like Tyson Barrie. Or how you see Tyson Barrie as not being your top-pairing guy.
Let's draw a line here for a second. It's rumored that the coach isn't enamored with this game. And when the coach is also a prominent part of your player personnel staff, then that coach has a lot of influence on whether or not you commit to a player long term.
And that's the thing too. And maybe Arizona ends up going through this as well too. I mean, when you're a head coach in the NHL, how many head coaches have sat in an office after a game and wanted to trade everybody? Right?
Right.
You hate your team. You want to trade everybody. That's always the dangerous thing when the head coach gets involved in player personnel, because I'm still firmly convinced there has to be that separation between the guy fuming in the coach's office and the guy making the decisions about player personnel. That's always been my one sort of about the situation in Arizona.
Right.
I always get a little weird when I see the coach that involved.
But also because general managers have a different scope. They also know what the market looks like. They also know how easily or how difficult it will be to replace that player. Like, they've got a different set of responsibilities than the coach does.
Yeah.
And when it comes to a guy like Tyson Barrie or, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk or any player like that, outside of a goaltender, a puck-moving defenseman is the hardest thing to acquire and the costliest thing to acquire.
And the thing
separates it from being a goal. What separates it from goaltenders.
And the thing that everybody seems to want. July 1st, trade deadline, you name it. What do we need? We need a defenseman that can move the puck. That's the whole game right now. We've got Sam Gagner on the line. 26 years old, 9 years in the NHL, 100% healthy. And we would imagine pretty close to signing with someone out there in the National Hockey League. Sam, how are you today? Thanks for getting up early.
I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
I Sam, just sort of mentioned the health thing glibly. You are 100%? You're good to go?
Yeah, no, it's great. Summer's been really good. It's nice to go into an off-season feeling relatively healthy. I think that, you know, everyone's got a little something, you know, once the season ends. But I'm feeling great right now. Training's going really well and, you know, excited for the upcoming season.
Sam, it's the summertime, and sometimes it's really hard for hockey podcasts to get a lot of traffic during the summer. So just go ahead and announce who you're signing with.
I wish I had the answer.
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, you know, the last time we saw you was playoffs, of course, with the Philadelphia Flyers against the Washington Capitals. And two players really popped for me. You could make the case you were one of the best forwards on the Philadelphia Flyers, and Radko Gudas was maybe the best player on the Philadelphia Flyers as well. We've talked about him countless times. People focus on all the hits and suspensions and all that, but as a teammate, what can you tell us, or former teammate, what can you tell us about Radko Gudas?
Well, I think he brings it every night. I mean, even every practice. I think if you see the way he competes, even in practice, it's pretty incredible. We talk about it all the time, how he's not injured all the time. He plays with the same amount of passion and practice as he does in a game, and it kind of, as a teammate, it gets you going and you feed off of it. He's a great teammate, and I think he has an underrated, underrated puck skills. He moves the puck really well, and, you know, he's able to get open really well. And, if he could ever hit the net, I think he would score 30 a year from back there. An absolute bomb. So, he's a great teammate, and, you know, Philly fans love him for a reason.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that one of those guys that maybe you have an impression of him before you play with him, and then you kind of find out he's a different type of player?
For sure. I think the one thing, though, when you do play against him, you're very aware of when he's out there, just because he has the ability to finish you if you're not looking. And, you know, that's an element that a lot of teams don't have. And, you know, Philly's pretty lucky to have with him. But then when you get a chance to play with him, you see how he moves the puck and what kind of player he is with the puck. And I think he has, you know, underrated ability in that sense.
Yeah, I mentioned you played in the league for 9 years now, Sam, and even though you're still, you know, young, you're 26 years old, I'm sure you've seen the game change since the time you entered the NHL to where it's at right now in 2016. What are a couple of things that jump out at you right away when you look back and you say, oh, yeah, I remember jumping in as an 18-year-old, here I am at 26, and this is what it's like now?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's incredible how much it has changed, and, you know, even the 9 years since I've played. I think now it's every year that the pace is continuing to get higher. And now you look around the league and every team has four lines that can skate. So, you know, there's less, I feel like there's less mistakes out there. There's less errors that you pounce on. But, I think, the game's in a great place right now. It's continuing to grow. You know, obviously, goal scoring is down a little bit and, you know, we're not getting, Pat Kane's an anomaly, but, you know, for the most part, you know, the scoring is down a little bit, but, yeah, I think, game's in a great place and it's going to continue to grow. And, you know, as a player, it's a lot of fun to be a part of the league right now.
Yeah. You just don't see players scoring 8 points a game anymore. It's bizarre. That, you know, seems to be a different,
I don't think you saw it then either. That was an anomaly as well.
Hey, Sam, so to that end, was Pittsburgh winning the way they won great news for players, because even now, like in the, like we were listening to George McPhee when he got hired by Vegas to be the GM, and he's, you know, he's espousing the way Pittsburgh plays. Other guys have talked about the way Pittsburgh plays. That would seem to be a style of hockey that a player would enjoy playing.
Oh, for sure. I think that anybody that watched the finals, you know, saw that the skill level and the pace of play was amazing. And, you know, as a skilled forward myself, I think it really gives you hope for the league going forward that, you know, that's how you win in this league. I think you look at Pittsburgh, you look at Chicago, you know, they're teams that they play with a lot of pace and they play with a lot of skill. And, you know, they've won championships doing it. So, I mean, you know, Pittsburgh was, you know, obviously, you know, being in Philly all year, it's never fun to watch Pittsburgh win. But I think that, that just the way they did it with their, you know, their depth guys stepping up and, you know, scoring a lot of big goals for them, but playing with speed and skill was, it was fun to watch.
It certainly was as well. What are you doing this off season? Like, has your off season training changed at all, on the ice, off the ice, in the gym? What are you up to?
I'm trying to skate a little more this summer. I always find that for me, it's all about flow for me and being on the ice and making sure that you know, that's the number one priority for me. You know, we got a pretty good group of guys that we train and skate with, and you know, it's allowed me to feel really good at this point of the summer. But, you know, obviously the main goal is to be ready for September. And, I think that, our entire group of guys is doing the right things and making sure that we're ready. You know, the gym stuff's been really good. You know, I feel as strong as ever. And, you know, just being on the ice, I think, is the number one thing for me. Just making sure that my game is as sharp as possible, and I'm continuing to, improve on things, you know, like my skating and my puck skills, so that when the season comes around, I'm really sharp.
Are you excited about the World Cup of Hockey, Sam?
Of course. I think anytime you get best on best, it's fun to watch. Obviously, you wish you were playing in it, but you know, Team Canada is a tough roster to crack, and I think that it's gonna be fun to watch for all hockey fans. You know, especially being in Toronto and you know, having the coverage that it's gonna have, and you know, I can't remember the last time there was a World Cup of Hockey, so I think it's gonna be an amazing event.
As a guy who's not too far removed from being a younger player, don't you want the Rooks to win the thing?
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be nice. I mean, I, you know, you look at their roster, they got a great team, and I think they have the opportunity to scare some teams. But, yeah, I mean, you look at Team Canada, it's gonna be hard to beat them. There's a lot of good hockey players out there, a lot of good teams, so it'll just be entertaining to watch.
Does it not have to be weird? I mean, you played U-20, U-17, I think you played World Championships as well. Is it going to be tough for those kids to play against their home country? Like, if you're, let's say you're Connor McDavid, right? Yeah. I mean, you've been with the program for so long. All of a sudden, I mean, we see this in the Spengler Cup every year, Canadians playing against their country in a tournament. Would that be weird for a hockey player, or do you just drop it?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is going to be weird. You know, like for myself, it's always an honor to play for Team Canada, and you get really excited to do it. So playing against them would be a little different, but I think at the end of the day, once the game starts, it doesn't matter who you're playing against. You know, you play one-on-one in your backyard, you're trying to win, and I think it's going to be the same way there. Might be a little nerves and be weird to begin with, but then once the game starts, you're trying to win, and you're trying to beat the guy across from you.
All right, Sam, what's been your pop culture consumption this summer? Are you binge-watching anything?
Binge-watching? No, I actually... We had a baby like 11 months ago, so that's taken up a lot of my time. So I haven't had a chance to watch much TV. But yeah, I wish once the season starts, that's kind of your TV watching time, because you're a lot more free time in season.
So, I mean, that's a lie though. You're watching a lot of stuff with like talking trains. And
you know what? We honestly would love it if you watch TV, but we try and get him to sit down and just relax for a little bit, but he just motors around all the time. So we don't even get to watch TV. So it's we're trying to get him to settle down and just sit there and watch TV for a little bit, but it's just not going well.
I was really hoping you were saying we're trying to get him to watch TV, but he keeps on crawling over and reading books. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, he doesn't do that either. He's always just moving. We got him stick handling the other day, so that was.
Really?
I was gonna say, Sam, are you agent shopping yet? Considering how I was moving around and stick handling.
No, not yet. But he's stick handling before he's walking. So I don't know what that means, but we're pushing him. That's for sure.
That means you got a prodigy on your hands. Sam, last one for me. You mentioned the goal scoring's down, and that's not exactly a secret. And I've watched you going back, get my Pierre Maguire on here, going back to when you played with the Marlboros and then in through the London Knights and that line with Kostitsyn and Kane. You've always been someone that's been able to run a power play. What has the philosophy behind, considering how the game works now, running a power play change? And we see power plays go hot. We see power plays go cold. You've always been someone that's excelled in that role. Have you had to change your thinking on it as the years evolved, or is a power play just a power play, Jeff?
I think that video is like being used way more than it ever has, and coaches are so good now at finding ways to break down a power play. The saying always goes, it's a lot easier to knock down a house than it is to build a house. So I find the penalty killer's job a little easier, but at the same time, it's just about being creative and finding lanes and being on the same page. I mean, I think, you know, it's always been an area of my game that I've excelled at. But then even this year, you get a chance to learn from a guy like Claude Giroux, who's one of the best in the league at it. And it just kind of adds, even more to your arsenal and allows you to learn from certain things. And I think the one thing he's really good at is just making, everyone, a threat on the power play. He's really good at using, all four other guys and making sure that, they get their look. And, when you have everyone, being a threat on your power play, it creates a lot more, openings. I think that's the biggest thing. If you're a quarterback, half wall type of guy, you got to make sure that everyone's a threat out there, and you're making the reads to get everyone involved.
Sam Gagner, good luck to you. Please call us immediately when you know where you're signing, so we can break the news.
All right, sounds good. Will do. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Awesome. There you go, Sam Gagner. Do you remember last time we had him on when there was that weird? Was it last time when there was an Edmonton to Tampa? Immediately flipped to Arizona.
To Arizona, yeah.
And I thought one of our greatest questions ever was, how come it didn't work out in Tampa?
Right.
This podcast is all finished and done. That's the moment I'll look back on and say, yeah, that's when we really hit our stride.
Oh, man. That is a highlight of highlights right there. I mean,
someone's getting a good value in Sam Gagner.
Yeah.
Someone really is. Someone's going to get a good value in Sam Gagner.
For me, obviously, the highlight remains the revelation that the little Asobo was a dog.
Oh, yeah, you didn't know. You just thought it was like a little homeless dude.
It was a little homeless child.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Helping going from town to town to help people.
We've had a lot of people this year whip us back with nostalgia in the podcast on Twitter.
That's because the less frequent the podcast in the summer, the more frequent people dip back in the archive to listen to them.
Don't do that.
No, please do. It's always interesting to hear how completely wrong we were, or what the story of the day was.
There's no way Nashville matches that Shea Weber offer sheet. He's a flyer. Take it to the bank.
Yeah, right.
Way to go, dummies. Way to go, guys.
There's zero chance Montreal trades PK. Oh, wait, that was a podcast from June, I just realized.
I was going to say, that wasn't that long ago. They'd have to be crazy to... Just hand it to me.
Pat,
all right,
Clark,
where were we before we talked to Bill Peters and Sam Gagner?
Do you have anything on Bettman and concussions? Because that's the only.
No,
thing
you know, really, I don't. Really I don't. With. I thought you brought up a really good point on Puck Daddy, which was, he'll point out NHL hockey, because one of the issues with the lawsuit as well is, and I've maintained this too. Like, you don't just suddenly get to. Like, no one gets to the NHL clean. Okay, no one's getting to the NHL with a clean bill of health. Like, by the time you get to the National Hockey League, you have a few, you've had a few injuries along the way. And it's folly to think that your brain isn't one of them for a lot of hockey players. So, does hitting in the NHL, you know, make things better? No, but does it exacerbate a situation that's already started going back to when you first started to play hockey, even before body contact was introduced? I'm glad you pointed that out, because that's always a distinction that the commissioner will make.
Yeah,
and what I always catch by you,
and what I come back to on this is the fact that like I was ranting about before Bill joined us, like this whole notion of the media is irresponsible for talking about CTE, yada 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 yada. If you really care about your post playing days players, your retired players, and what they're hearing about CTE or what they're being told about their own health, like if you really care about that, why don't you spend some quality time with Dan Carcillo and really back whatever it is that he's trying to do to help former players transition into retired life and to help former players that have transitioned that are struggling with it cope. Because to me, like we've talked about a million times in the show, I don't agree with the lawsuit. I don't think the lawsuit has merit. I don't think there's smoking guns. I don't think the NHL has been trying to hide anything. And from a bigger picture perspective, I don't think players that play professional hockey think that there won't be physical tolls to pay having played this sport for, you know, a dozen years. That said, I respect the fact that the players are essentially trying to get help, financial help, and I don't think there's enough of it. And I think one of the reasons the lawsuit exists is to try to create an environment where the NHL does more to help former players. And so at the end of the day, I come back to that when I read those Bettman comments. I'm like, if you're really concerned about what players are hearing and what they're doing and how they're feeling about the potential of CTE, well, don't shoot the messenger. Don't demonize doctors and the media. Do something.
Let me ask you this.
And establish ways to really help these guys.
Let me ask you this. Do you think the NHL would be doing that if this lawsuit didn't exist? Because I think they would. Considering everything the NFL has gone through, I mean, that scared all the leagues. Okay, and you can be assured that it scared the NHL. And if they weren't faced with their own lawsuit now, I still maintain they would be behaving differently. But a lot of what they do has to be tempered with the fact that they are in a litigious situation right now. And everything will be scrutinized. Like, I'm with you, Greg. Like, oh, how come they're not getting in bed with Dan Carcillo? How come they're not doing more with the Players Association? Well, right now, anything they do can be brought up in a court of law. That's why, in some ways, the National Hockey League is a little bit frozen on this one.
I feel you on that, but I also wonder, though, we are in an environment where the numbers for hockey in Canada on the youth level have dropped. There's a lot more kind of
Can we pause on that? I just want to clarify. It's not that it's dropped. It's just not growing at the same rate.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, I'll clarify. I still think that it's in the best interest of the NHL to not, you know, even if there wasn't a lawsuit, to not link playing the sport with degenerative brain diseases. Because, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine the NHL going out and being like, hockey's for everyone. Here's a donation of skates and pads. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, 15 years from now, your brain's mush. Enjoy.
Yeah,
it's a real hard sell in 2016.
It's a tough one. And listen, as a hockey parent, I mean, TJ's got a couple of years under his belt now. Brody's starting this season playing hockey. Because now all of a sudden I've got two dogs in the fight. Like, I've got two kids to try to protect while they play this game. And I think a lot of it comes down to how you teach your kids. I think a lot of it comes down to coaching. I think a lot of it comes down to the leagues themselves. And the one thing that, you know, always looking for complementary sports for the game if you have hockey kids. And the one thing that TJ played this year, actually Brody did as well, did really good for a four-year-old. The one thing TJ did was he played high-level lacrosse this summer. And, I mean, we're going every couple of days, we're going to a tournament somewhere. Oshawa, Whitby, Coburg. We're going all over the place for, like, high-level lacrosse tournaments. And it's full contact, by the way. Like, lacrosse, when you begin, it's full contact. Mm-hmm. TJ got smoked a few times. Mm-hmm. Like, to the point where I'm like, ooh, should I go on the floor? Like, it's bad. And it happens every game. Kids are getting dropped. But they are learning how to play. The one reason why I want both of our kids to play lacrosse is I want them to be able to play a sport that is similar to hockey, as similar as you can get to hockey, and play that game that forces you to keep your head up because the object of play is in the air and is not on the floor. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. And I wanted body contact as well.
You want him to become John Tavares.
Or Joe Nieuwendyk. I've gone on a lacrosse scholarship to Cornell as well. Took hockey instead.
Finally, Pat Clark writes in and says, no. Hey, any summer hockey reading suggestions for August? In addition to Take Your Eye Off the Puck. By the way, my book, Take Your Eye Off the Puck, is still available wherever books are sold and on Amazon.com. And has been hovering around first or second on the charts all summer. So thanks for that.
Nice.
What have you been reading this summer? Anything hockey related?
Olympic related, just as I prep for the Olympics. This has been the first stretch in I can't tell you how long where I haven't been reading a hockey book for 3 weeks. The last one that I did pick up, hang on, grab it right now. Hang on. Go tap dance here for 2 seconds. I'm going to go to my bookshelf.
I haven't read any hockey books this summer. I think it's the same thing as the Olympics. It's only been like, we counted up. There's been like 5 days of me not doing something this summer. So I've been reading not hockey stuff. I read Judd Apatow's book, Sick in the Head, which is just a collection of his interviews, and that was pretty good as a fan of the creative process. Oh, by the way, as a fan of the creative process, highly recommend the recent Nerdist podcast with Butch Vig, drummer for
what?
Garbage.
What, from Garbage?
Yeah, it's good.
I love Butch Vig.
Talks a lot about music craft and song craft and working with temperamental artists and things of that nature.
Was Shirley Manson one of them?
No. Well, yeah, actually, yeah. I mean, like he said that the Garbage sessions are, you know, kind of volatile at times because you're dealing with a lot of different personalities. But what I found really, I don't know, I found it really interesting. The one thing, whenever I listen to interviews, I always kind of put myself in the chair and say, if I had one question and, you know, that I could get in, what would it be? And the thing that I would love to know about that from like a guy like Butch Vig is, when you're dealing with artists like Kurt Cobain and Billy Corgan and Shirley Manson that write from a place of real personal pain, what is your responsibility as a producer to enhance that? Like, what does he do? Like, is he simply just make it sound good, or is the ear always tuned to how can I sonically match the emotion in these words? Like, that's one of the things about music production I've never really been clear on.
The one question that I always have of producers, and I'd be curious to hear Butch Vig's answer on this one, and every artist is different, and you have the same question about painters, have the same question about sculptors, have the same question about writers. Maybe you can answer this one. How do you know when it's done?
Oh,
like,
they get into that.
How do you know when a song is done? Like, how do you know when to say, okay, back up, this thing is over?
They got into that because they were talking about this Tom Petty documentary in which when they did Damn the Torpedoes, there would be like 200 takes on a song. And Chris Hardwick was like, yeah, when do you know it's done? Like by take 89, you're like, oh yeah, we nailed it. Like, when do you know? And my answer is, I mean, the simple answer is you just know. Yeah. The harder answer is, it's usually one part of a story, and I guess it'd be one part of a song that you feel isn't right yet. And as soon as that puzzle piece fits, then you believe it's right. Now,
but isn't that different for everybody involved in the process?
It might be, but I mean, ultimately, it's going to be one person making the call. Like, you know, if you're a producer, if you're, you know, George Martin, and you're listening to a Beatles song, and you're like, you know, you're listening to, you know, Ringo, probably.
Hey, Paul Bernard Purdy, but okay.
And you're like, oh, good job, lads. He's finally on beat. And you're like, lock it in. No, I mean, but like as a writer, like there could be 17 different things wrong with a story that I write, mostly spelling. And if I get the one thing that I'm working on, if I'm getting that one turn of phrase or that one section that needs an extra level of clarity, or maybe it's a placement of a joke somewhere, like if I get that one thing right, then I'm like, all right, this is it. This is perfect now, even if it's not. What was the book you were talking about?
Well, there's two that I have on the go right now. One of them I'm almost done. But it's one of these books that I keep having to go back and, like, I have to go back 40 pages and read again and then get to page 80 and then go to page 95 and then go back to page 60. And that's Stat Shot by Rob Volman. The Ultimate Guide to Hockey Analytics.
Yeah.
Stat Shot's really good. That's great. The other one is, and I hate having to put it down because I really don't know a ton about his life other than he's always been the answer to my favorite hockey trivia question, which is, let's see if you can do this one. Name me the player, history of the NHL, who has the most Stanley Cups and never, never played for either the Edmonton Oilers or the Montreal Canadiens.
Oh, wow. It's not Glenn Anderson.
Or the Islanders, for that matter.
It's not.
The answer is this guy has eight.
He's eight cups.
As a player.
Never played for the Oilers. Can you give me an era or a stretch of years?
Sure. Yeah. His cups, I'll give it away. The cups were late '50s, early '60s.
Oh, all right. Go. Who is it?
He won four cups as a center, four as a defenseman. That was Leonard Red Kelly. The Red Kelly story is one that I'm about. Where am I at here? 63 pages in. But I've had to put it down for the Olympics. I'll pick it up again in September.
There you go.
That's what I'm on.
Last thing for me, obviously, is, you know, as I mentioned on Twitter this week, if you have the Netflix and you have 8 hours, sit yourself down and watch Stranger Things. This is the 1980s,
Do not spoil it. Please go.
Are you watching it now?
Oh, yeah, it's spectacular. It's great. Unbelievably good.
So Merrick, it's basically, if you took E.T., mostly E.T., E.T., The Goonies, vintage Stephen King books like It and Firestarter, and a dash of Alien, and a dash of Clive Barker.
Any RoboCop in there?
No RoboCop. And best of all, really best of all, the synth soundtracks from classic John Carpenter films, and you put it in a blender, and then you put it through a strainer and took out all the bad things and just got the essence of all those things, and then you'd have Stranger Things. It's so great from a narrative perspective. It's so great from a craft perspective, in the sense that everything is really, the aesthetics are great and the suspense is great. But it's also from, like, you know, a child of the 80s perspective, just super fun to play spot the reference. And some of them are really overt. Like, they recreate scenes from E.T., basically. But some of them are a little bit sneakier. Like, there's a character, like, this is going to make no sense to you, but I'll tell the rest of the people. There's a character in Stranger Things whose hairstyle and eyewear mimic the character Martha Plimpton played in Goonies, which is such a specific reference that it almost makes you gleeful that they made it. It's great. And clearly Sam's on board, so that's all you need to know. Sam, how many episodes have you seen?
I've seen 5 episodes.
Okay, so you're past the real turn of the screw in that show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. But it's like I'm completely captivated. Like, I just love it so much.
It also has one of the scariest, like, visuals for me, like, personally. Merrick, do you remember when David Copperfield walked through the Great Wall of China?
Yes, I remember that.
When he's about to walk through the Great Wall of China, at the end, they have this, like, sheet or something over the wall, and they show his torso and hands kind of reaching under the sheet to indicate that he is like coming through the wall. And that's one of the scariest things. They did it in Nightmare on Elm Street, where Freddy kind of like comes through the wall and you see his face and hands sort of like poking through a wall. Like, they have that in this show, too, and that's one of the scariest things.
Eh?
Like, when a wall stretches because there's some kind of magical thing behind it. I hate that. It's a real scary thing.
I'll add this to the list of other shows that I'll never get around to watching.
All right, so this is the last one that we'll do of these before I go to Rio. Hopefully we can do one whilst I'm in Rio, but we'll figure it out.
Hey, a couple of people tweeted in before. What's happening with Puck Soup?
Oh, we're gonna do one of those in Rio too. I think the way we're gonna do like one in August and then pick it up again in September when I'm back and also when the World Cup kind of ramps up. Also, there's gonna be some live MVSW happening in September, but we don't want to announce it yet.
Stand by.
Hold on to that one.
But yeah. So, anyway, so bottom line for your boy is, you know, I'll be tweeting Olympic stuff and occasional hockey stuff. You can find my Olympic writing on fourth place medal on Yahoo. Oh, by the way, that other Yahoo stuff, can't really talk about it. I appreciate everybody reaching out. I appreciate a lot of people saying very sweet things about the work we do on Puck Daddy. and in some cases being like, it's the only thing I read on Yahoo. That's very nice of you, and I really appreciate it, but I hope that you understand that, like, it's not really a time for public comment.
I think everybody gets that. I would have to assume you're totally safe, though.
I think everything will work out fine. But just know that I hear you, ladies and gentlemen. I don't hear the people that are like, better get your resume in order. You're a-holes. But I hear the rest of you,
you
who are really sweet.
You better hope they're hiring at the post office, dum-dum. I hear they're busy around Christmas. Ha ha.
I will say this, and it's been pointed out by a lot of people that I've worked with through the years. This is such a small industry at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You never know where the roads lead you. And for me, they lead right back to AOL, which is where I worked before I came to Yahoo, which is weird.
That's where I met you, or when
at
I
Fan
met
House.
You.
Yeah, at Fan House.
Yeah, that's right.
Fan House is where I never know where people hopped on the train when it comes to my career, but like Fan House is where I wrote the Eklund expose, if you've ever read that thing. And now we're full circle. Working with the AOLs again.
Yahoo! Yeah. It's amazing where you end up. Who knows where I will.
All right, so Olympics, beach volleyball for me, fencing, equestrian probably. I always like to go there, although I'm going to have to load up on the mosquito stuff.
So what do you do when a dead body washes up on the shore again of beach volleyball?
Well, according to the film Swiss Army Man, I make friends with it. And it'll be Daniel Radcliffe.
I
don't know. I mean, I this is again like the last three Olympics that I've covered where the pre-stories written about it have been apocalyptic. I think in some cases this is the worst of them all.
This is different.
At least in Sochi, if I wasn't gay or a dog, I knew I was pretty safe. But in this one,
well, if you were a dog, David Backus would bring you home, and you'd be fine.
That's true. In this one, it's like the police are basically holding signs at the airport saying, don't come here, go home, or you're not safe. But I don't know. I feel there was an American rower who recently wrote on her blog, hey, why do you guys have to focus on all the bad
things?
I
saw that, yeah, yeah.
And my heart goes out to her. I know why we have to focus on the bad things, because essentially the IOC is a giant corrupt organization, and that's why we're in situations like this. But when I get there and I start covering these sports and these athletes, it really is about that. It really is thinking back to when I was a high school sports reporter covering, you know, kids that were like 14, 15 and breaking state swimming records, and their only dream in life was to be where I'm going. And as much as everything else needs coverage, and I'll be there to cover it and hopefully find out some other malarkey in a bathroom that will get me a billion retweets, like it did in Sochi. At the end of the day, it really is about these athletes who don't have a Stanley Cup final and don't have a Super Bowl and go to the Olympics because this is it. This is the pinnacle. And they maybe have one shot at it in life. So there's always a part of that for me with the Olympics that makes me love them, despite, you know, dead bodies floating up on the water. And
I'll never forget flying back from Beijing in 2008. And like anybody else, I can be as cynical and negative and point out all the flaws in the IOC, and there are many, and the list is lengthy and it continues. See the most recent scandal with Russia. But I can remember flying back from Beijing, and I think pretty much half of Team Canada were flying back with us, and just talking to the athletes and their stories and how much this meant to them and how much they had to sacrifice and how much, you know, even though this isn't going to set them up for their lives, how much this was their entire lives and what these events meant to them and how much it impacted them and their families, win or lose, all of it. I know going in, there's all the stories to the person that wrote that blog post. There's all the stories about, you know, the bodies and, you know, the places where you have to stay and the deteriorating, you know, state of affairs in the various residences and the political strife and cops aren't getting paid and they're ripping off tourists and all the stuff, potential for terrorist activity, all of it.
All I know is that during the security briefing I had from my employer, they basically said, you know, you may not want to talk on your phone in public. He's like, Jesus.
Oh, jeez. Well, when we went to Beijing, we were told, you know, assume that every room is bugged.
Oh, they said that in Sochi, too.
Yeah, just assume it. Just act
as if they also said assume that every room has cameras in it, so I just walked around naked all the time.
I did same in Beijing, too. And we had, like, in Media Village, I was the same. Like, all right,
I wrote Putin across my crotch and made my penis the eye. I thought was really, I don't think he appreciated that necessarily.
Nice touch. Nice touch, Greg. You're class. You can't spell class without ass. Good for you.
There you go. So now that we're like, you know, an hour and 28 minutes into the podcast, that's when the penis jokes start happening. So we'll bid you adieu.
Yeah, thanks. There you go. We're done.
Thanks to Bill Peters. Oh, Jesus. For joining us. Okay. And thanks to Sam Gagne for joining us. And thanks for listening, everybody. We love you. And we're happy we were able to do one. We feel bad if you've been working out to this because it's long, and your dog's probably tired. But thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.